Someone's been fiddling around with the works of one of New Zealand's finest writers. Witi Ihimaira is probably best known as the author of The Whale Rider, which was made into an Academy Award-winning film. He was a pioneer of Maori writing in English, publishing his first book of short stories, Ponamu Ponamu, in 1972, and his first novel, Tangi, in 1973. In recent years, those two books and some other early works, have been republished with significant editorial changes. So, who dares to take such license with the author's work? Well, none other than Witi Ihimaira himself. To explain why he's revising his early fiction, Witi Ihimaira joins us from Hawaii, where he's taken up a visiting professorship, the Citizens Chair at the University of Hawaii. Witi Ihimaira, welcome to the Book Show.
Kia ora, Peter. Well, it sounds like I'm on trial or something.
Well, why did you decide to rewrite earlier books?
Well, you know, it's really been interesting listening to the news, because up here in America, of course, we hear about Obama and news from an American perspective. And so it's great to hear news from an Australian perspective. And actually, the reason why I've written or rewritten these works is from a New Zealand perspective, which I would not imagine that any Australian would possibly understand.
I mean, you wanted to give them a more New Zealand perspective?
I did. I wanted to go back. At the time that I wrote them, the aesthetics were excellent. You know, the quality was there in terms of there being literary works according to the standards of the time. And those standards were pretty high, because they were set by Janet Frame and by Frank Sargeson and by other Pākehā writers or European writers in New Zealand. And so what I had to do in those days was to step up to that mark. But there was another mark that I needed to step up to, and that was the Māori mark. And in terms of Māori cultural standards and Māori literary standards, I just didn't think that the work cut it.
In what ways?
Well, you know, in those days, for instance, I'm not really too sure who were the Aboriginal writers who are around. I think, I don't even know if Madruru was around at that time, but Kath Walker was around certainly, and I don't even know if there was an Aboriginal novelist working at the time. So I was the first Māori novelist. This is in 1972. And in those days, the New Zealand mythology was that New Zealand was one country of two people, and therefore our cultural imperatives and our historical imperatives and our social imperatives were all towards blending. Much to my sorrow, I bought into that. So the work wasn't inflected with what I considered to be the reality of the situation, and I've always been unhappy with those first five books because of that. And that's why I began to rewrite them 30 years later.
I want to give the audience some examples of the changes you've made. And just, I'm not being nitpicking here, and you're certainly not on trial, but it's a way of giving them a flavour, I suppose. So this is a brief sentence from a short story called A Game of Cards. It's a story about the death of the narrator's grandmother. And in the original version of the story, you're describing a group of older Maori women gathering to play cards, and you wrote, "The sitting room would be crowded with kuias, all puffing clouds of smoke, dressed in their old clothes, laughing and cackling and gossiping about who was pregnant." Now, in the new version, you write, "The sitting room would be crowded with the women. There they'd be dressed in their best clothes. In those days, Maori used to be heavy smokers, so the women would all be puffing clouds of smoke, laughing and joking and gossiping about who was pregnant." Now, there's three differences in that. One is the reference to smoking, one is the old clothes versus new clothes, and the other is you've dropped the description of the women as cackling.
Well, all of those were for very, very good reasons, and they're political reasons. The first reason, the cackling, for instance, just kind of made it too melodramatic. But it bought into the framework within which Māori were described in those days.
And, well, it's a slightly derogatory term, I guess, too, because yes. It reminds us of chickens and...
That's right. Yeah. Yes, so I wanted to get rid of that, so that went out. And then the reference to smoking is that today, the highest number of people in New Zealand who are dying of cancer are Māori women. and so for that reason, I wanted to create a different kind of perspective on the smoking. They're still smoking, but I wanted to bring this message that in those days we did it, but in these days we don't. In all of these cases, you ask anybody to rewrite a short story, I'll tell you what, it's damn hard because short stories are so short, and that short story that you're talking about is only around about 5 pages long. Mm. But I've tried my best to kind of refract everything that I saw in those days through much more informed and much more wiser eyes than I did. In those days, I was kind of like an opossum, was caught in the headlights of New Zealand literature.
The other change in that excerpt was about between old and new clothes, and in the newer version, the women are wearing their best clothes, their new clothes. And I guess, again, it's showing a higher kind of respect. Is that the right? Am I right there?
Yes, you are. And I know that for some people it might sound as if I'm trying to get the best of both worlds, but I truly felt that I needed to take the way in which I had described those people out of that that at the time kind of sentimentalized look and create them as the real people that I knew. And I've got this little saying that I say to myself, I am accountable to the past, and I have this contract with the people who've gone before me. And over the last 30 years, I've felt that quite terrible about the fact that, that contract on my part was not kept as well as it should have been.
You didn't think you'd honoured your ancestors appropriately with your writing?
No, I didn't. No, I did not. And so, Zan Land has famously said, it's always darkest before everything becomes totally black. And so what I did was then make a very strong decision to ask my publishers if I could rewrite those first 5 books. The other ones have been much, much easier to rewrite because they've been novels and they've been over 400 or 500 pages.
Well, I just want to give... this is the book show on ABC Radio National. I'm speaking to New Zealand writer Witi Ihimaira about the revisions he's made to some of his earlier works. And I want to give the audience one more example, if I could, Witi, and that's this. This is from another short story called The Whale. And it's the story of an old Maori man who knows he's soon to die and who pays his last visit to the community meeting house, the real centre of the community. In the early version of the story, this elder, this Kaumatua, is grief-stricken at the loss of Maori culture and the drift of young people away to Pakeha, to white ways, and tears stream down his face. In the revised version, it's anger which shows in his face. He's angry now rather than grieving.
Well, again, I was trying then to look at it from the perspective 30 years later that Māori now have gone through a whole period of sovereignty. And we have actually, created for ourselves quite a distinctive community and culture in New Zealand, one which, in fact, all New Zealanders are very, very proud of. We've got our land coming back to us. We've got our culture coming back to us. We've got more people in political power than we ever, ever had before. So Māori are not dying, and that the whole tone of that earlier short story was that we were a dying race. So again, I felt that I had also bought in to this whole terrible kind of framework of New Zealand, of Māori as being this glorious but death-ridden race, and I didn't want to do that to us anymore 30 years later.
Yeah, you're portraying a much stronger, more vibrant community, aren't you, in these rewritten works?
In all of them.
More hopeful as well.
Yeah. Tried to make them much more affirming. Tried to make the perspective stronger. Now that I'm no longer dazzled by those headlights as that kind of a possum, and now that I'm 30 years older, I've really tried to create a much more richer, resonant tapestry of thought. Of course, as you know, a lot of people in New Zealand haven't liked it, and they've had to kind of pay back their money for the second version.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, I presume you've been accused of rewriting history or of attempting to write novels that are politically correct.
I have been, and you know, I've had to take that on the chin from both Māori and Pākehā. It's not only Pākehā who have accused me of that, it is Māori also. I always keep on saying to them, well, look, you know, I don't believe that literature, just like our own culture, is static, and I think that literature is an organic kind of construct, that it continues to grow, and as long as I grow, I will always continue to want to create newer versions, just so that I can maintain the integrity of those versions.
And it's not like the older versions cease to exist. I mean, they're there in libraries. That's how I've been able to compare the two, by looking, getting the new edition and comparing it to a version from the library. So readers can choose which version they read. I guess the questions might arise in things like school curriculum. People might argue about which version should be taught.
Well, I like to think that they both, you know, they have both versions, but I would much prefer that they that the schools take the later versions rather than the first ones, primarily because the school child of the 1970s was a different kind of person than the school child of the year 2008. I mean, we're talking about over 30 years now of change in New Zealand, and I wouldn't want them to look at those works and think, oh, well, you know, this is how Māori are, when I know now that they are a much more vigorous and aggressive people. And so my work is reflecting the journey. I've always wanted to reflect and witness my times as they've, you know, as they've arisen. So every time that I've taken on this revision job, and it's taken me 3 years to do this, away from, you know, creating new works, I've always felt, no, I've got to do this.
And I presume you've had some positive responses as well.
Well, there's been, you know, I think it's been running around about 50-50, if I can be truthful. And I've made an ethical decision that if anybody doesn't like it, well, then, you know, I will refund them the money, and then they can, you know, get their money back on the book.
You've promised your readers that if they don't like a book, you'll refund them?
Yeah. And I think I've paid about 60 customers that. But, you know, it's really good because then I can get into a discussion with them, and then I can explain, you know, that kōrero is living or speaking or talking or articulating history. It's a continuous change, a process of change. Now, you know, we used to look at history in a certain way around about 30 years ago when Māori weren't writing history. But now, in the year 2008, there's all of this historical material that I never had recourse to in the 1970s. So with the novels, what I've done is I've taken a lot of that historical material and put it into the book because I never had it in those days.
How many novels have you rewritten?
I've rewritten four, and I have rewritten one collection of short stories, Pounamu Pounamu, which is it's actually been reprinted in New Zealand just about every year, so that's why there's been this great fuss about the rewriting. You know, it's been an iconic kind of book, and I'm shortly to start rewriting the second of the short story collections that I wrote in 1976 called The New Net Goes Fishing. And I'm going to do it. I'm damned if I'm going to stop now.
Well, are there other books that you already write? What about The Whale Rider, for example?
No, from Whale Rider on, I'm really happy. I had caught up with the politics of the time. I had grown up. I was a stronger person. I didn't need to be loved. I wanted to be respected. And that work has much more honesty and integrity about it.
You're also, amidst all this rewriting, you have, I think, found time to write a new novel. And this is called The Troena Sea, is that correct?
Yes, it's called The Troena Sea. It's actually half set in Australia. I thought I'd join the history wars, actually, you know, and help Kate Grenville out. I think she's a fantastic writer. And I'm not too sure why it is that, you know, people have not really credited her with the gigantic work of imagination that both of her novels are.
Oh, well, we'd love to see the history wars get a new lease of life in Australia.
You'll be getting it, that's for sure.
So tell us why your next novel will reignite Australia's history wars.
Well, primarily it's going to be revisiting the transportation issue in Tasmania and what is happening there, of course, in the novel. Six Māori were transported to Tasmania in 1846, so I'm actually covering that period.
So these are six Māori who I think were transported to Tasmania because they fought
they were political prisoners. And so I'm looking at that whole transportation issue, but from a different perspective. That is the perspective of political prisoners who were sent to Australia. I think it's going to be a wonderful book, and I hope that Australians like it.
Well, we'll have to get you back on the book show to talk about it when it comes out. But it's interesting because, of course, here in Australia, we've just seen a history book published about the role of Australia's first overseas military expedition, which, of course, was to send soldiers to fight in the Maori land wars in New Zealand.
I've got to read that book, that's for sure. But, you know, really, these are very exciting literary times, you know, with much more history being made evident throughout. It's just absolutely riveting, and fiction, literature, has in fact got to catch up with history and try to create a partnership there in terms of, you know, of what we're doing, because our histories are all important to us, not just in Australia, but in New Zealand. And through fiction, we can begin to understand the patterns that are there, you know, in our countries. In New Zealand, for instance, my main framework has been to try to create more of a New Zealand perspective within that history. And now I'm trying to create that Māori perspective within Australian history.
How does that affect your international readership? Because if you're deliberately cultivating a New Zealand perspective, does that have the risk, I suppose, of closing your work off to readers outside New Zealand?
Oh, look, you know, I'm embarrassed to tell you that I'm not really interested in an international career. I mean, it's secondary to what I really want to do, which is to continue to create works for New Zealanders. So, for instance, I never translate my Māori words into English. It doesn't matter whether or not, you know, it's an edition that's appearing in England or in the USA or whatever. And so my work is not really all that amenable overseas. But what's interesting is that after Whale Rider, I now have six of my novels optioned to be feature films. And it's through those feature films that I think that international reputation will come, actually not through books at all.
I think you've just written the script for a film adaptation of your book, The Dream Swimmer.
I have, and there are also book adaptations which have been bought by New Zealand producers and really well-known producers for Nights in the Gardens of Spain, The Uncle's Story, The New Ned Goes Fishing, a short story that I wrote called Medicine Woman, as well as The Matriarch and Dream Swimmer. So, you know, I'm in a really good position for that kind of international career. But as I say, I'm really more interested in being a New Zealand writer.
Do you get pressure from your publishers, because you're published by Penguin, a big international publisher, to make concessions to an international audience, to translate the Maori words that you use into English, for example?
Well, I have had the most wonderful publishers and the most wonderful agent, but I'm really proud that they have understood that I adopt a Māori kaupapa or purpose. And so they have actually been really, really, very, very good in accommodating the Māori perspective or my personal Māori perspective on the way that I do things. I don't know if there are many other authors, you know, who have that kind of contract with their publishers, but I'm really proud that they've done so. And they must do so, because I am not a Pākehā writer, so therefore they shouldn't expect me to operate within the same sort of dynamic as a European writer. I just cannot operate in that way. So it's really, as I say, it's a humbling experience for me to be treated with respect as an Indigenous writer in the world.
Well, Witi Ihimaera, thank you very much for joining us on the book show.
Kia ora, Peter.
And we look forward to the Troena Sea when it comes out and to having you back on the program then.
Thanks again.
Okay. Witte Ihemaira speaking to us from his temporary home in Hawaii, where he currently holds the Citizen's Chair at the University of Hawaii. He's also Professor and Distinguished Creative Fellow in Maori Literature at the University of Auckland. The revised version of his novel, The Dream Swimmer, was republished last month, and his new novel, The Troena Sea, as I said, will be published in November. All his books are published by Penguin. You'll find details on the Bookshow website, abc.net.au/rn/bookshow.